Tired of the gender binary, gender policing, or just want to speak your truth?
Join CITR's Gender Empowerment Collective.
This group of radio makers is all about centering the voices, issues, concerns, and experiences of women-identified, transgender, intersex, two-spirit, genderqueer, gender non-conforming, non-binary, and gender-fluid folks and allies.
Anyone can join, no experience necessary.
Like the Gender Empowerment Collective on Facebook or email volunteer at citr.ca.
Our show, Babe Waves, airs Thursdays from 5 to 6 and features music, interviews, events, news, commentary, basically anything we care to talk about.
See you then.
Nikkei National Museum's Hastings Park 1942 exhibit marks the 75th anniversary of Japanese-Canadian internment. Visit the exhibit until January 13th to see Japanese Problem, a contemporary performance piece which offers a glimpse into a dark episode of history at the Pyeongese Livestock Barn. Nikkei National Museum is located in Burnaby and entry is by donation.
When you join Balloon Club, we guarantee that you will be able to make a balloon poodle within the first day.
Here at the UBC Ant Club, we just like to talk about ants and compare ant farms. It's really cool.
Paperclip Club is all about, well, paperclips mostly.
At Blah Club, you can blah blah, blah 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 blah.
Explosion!
There's only one club worth joining at UBC, and that's CITR 101.9 FM. We got free tickets to shows, whirly pops, professional help in all types of audio engineering, passes to festivals, crazy parties, live bands, swag. All types of crazy people. Our programming manager rides a motorcycle. There's freestyle rapping, Nardwar, the human serviette, the vinyl and record libraries, Discorder magazine, free studio recording, and it sure beats the hell out of Paperclip Club, which is a thing that I just made up because I work at
CITR.
So come check us out on the floor of the Student Union Building. We got all types of crazy shit for you to do. Or check us out online at www.citr.ca.
To understand more about fashion, we asked CITR student executive and fashion expert Jonathan Q what fashion means to him.
Like, it's just aesthetically something that's so ostentatious. Typically. I mean, because of course, I mean, it's also, you know, I mean, when you say fashion, I think people are talking explicitly about consumerism, as opposed to someone who buys, like you know, let's say, you know, someone buys a clothing.
If you really want to know more about fashion, come on down to CITR in the Student Union Building of UBC and pick up some of our merchandise à la mode. Nous avons t-shirts, sweatshirts, socks, and coffee mugs.
But it's also very aesthetically gripping.
To keep you styling in support of the station you love. Isn't that right, Jonathan?
Well, actually, is it? Because, I mean, you know, I was going to say because of the cultural vacuum that we exist within, but then, you know, really, fashion today is kind of derived from the European idea of couture, and that's been around for centuries.
You're listening to CITR 101.9. Broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
You're listening to Cult from the UBC. It's October 26, 2017, and we're coming to you from CITR 101.9 FM. We're broadcasting to you from the ancestral, traditional, and unceded territories of the Musqueam people. Yeah, and I'm Ola, Olamide Alanion, a staff writer at the UBC. Joining me in the studio today is Tristan Wheeler,
yo,
senior staff writer, regular on the show, and UBC's most intrepid reporter.
Yes, that is me.
That is you, yeah. Also in the studio with us, it's Jack Lamming. He is a senior staff writer, our leading sartorial expert at the UBC, and a reluctant hype beast.
Yeah, though that pretty much describes me. Here I am.
And finally, it's the supreme cult leader himself, Sam Dubois. culture editor at the UBC. Thank you for gracing us with your presence.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Cool. Yeah. So for those of you who don't know, the UBC is the independent campus newspaper at the University of British Columbia. It's written and edited completely by students, and it's the definitive source of news for people at the university and the surrounding community. We have the print issue that publishes every Tuesday, and we publish stories online every day. The Cult podcast hails from the culture section of the paper. So, yeah, we're just going to start from there. First of all, we have Jack's article. It's called Move to the Back of the Goddamn 99 Bus. You can kind of guess what that's about.
It's about people who don't move to the... It's an ode to the 99 in general. It was a response to an event that somebody made on Facebook.
Tristan will talk to us about the running list on the 99 things to do at UBC and the things that he's ticked off the list.
I did a few. I did kind of a series of things over the course of a day, which was really took the wind out of me in a way.
Then we'll be talking to Jack and Tristan about their trip to the Vancouver Fashion Week and the bizarre video they made for the UBC about it.
And the autofocus on the camera didn't work, and the manual focus was incredibly spotty. And
well, the manual focus is totally up to you, so...
And lastly, we'll be finishing up with an interview with Maura Whiten, the features editor at the UBC, and Julia Burnham, a contributor at the UBC. They'll be talking about their contributions to the memoir series in the culture section. But first off, Jack Lamming's article about bus riding etiquette. Well, could you just tell us more about what it's about?
Hey,
What's the title?
The title is Please Move to the Rear of the Bus, or something to that effect.
Okay, cool.
Move to the Back of the Bus on the 99. So, the article, which I definitely had, I had complete editorial control over it. From every aspect. It's about people who don't move to the... It's an ode to the 99 in general. It was a response to an event that somebody made on Facebook. That's, I think, tomorrow. If tomorrow is not the 27th.
Keep going.
So, with tomorrow being 3 days ago, which would be the 24th, there's an event at 9 in the morning, which is Move to the Rear of the 99 Beeline, which is an announcement that any 99 rider like myself is very intimately familiar with.
I don't think it's just like the 99. I think it's it's express buses.
Yeah.
I think like the 49.
44 definitely.
84 as well. Yeah.
Most buses, I think. The 41 does that too.
Yeah.
I've had it on the 14.
You don't need to brag, guys.
Yeah, I take the bus.
You don't. The funny thing is, you don't actually get it that much on the 99 because there's three doors.
Yeah.
That you can enter through.
Just walk through, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So I think it's like, it tends to be like the buses that go through like very, very obscure, not obscure neighborhoods, but like places that like the buses only come through like every like 15 minutes or something, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Could you like, so I know the article like kind of like lists like a bunch of people that are just like really annoying on the bus. So could you like just talk a little bit about that?
I also had people who talk on the bus because people shouldn't be allowed to talk on the bus.
What are we
especially
in, like
not, not like people can talk to each other like if they're friends, but if I'm sitting there on the bus listening to something and somebody like taps me on the shoulder.
Oh, okay.
Like, hey.
Nobody should talk to me.
Yeah.
Okay.
People are allowed to talk to each other as long as they are respectful about it.
Cool.
And just don't have it within my earshot. And who else I have?
You had like a bunch of people. Like you talked about like a really annoying person that stands like in the middle of the bus.
Oh yeah. It always gets to me when people like if somebody gets off and there's two people like standing next to that seat. And neither of them sit down because they're like, oh, the other person might want to. And then that bus, that seat just sort of sits there. That really gets to me when you're too far away and you're not going to walk across like six people to sit in this one seat because that's even worse.
It's like a weird commitment problem where like, you know, it's like both sides are like not sure if they should like they're not sending credible signals about like whether they want to sit down on the chair or not. And then like it ends up like this, the seat ends up being wasted kind of.
Yeah.
It's like this kind of like weird tragedy.
It's a shame.
Yeah. I just wanted to like also talk to like the rest of us in the studio as well. We could also talk about like just our other biggest pet peeves of like the bus. I know there's like a campaign done by TransLink about like they had like these weird cartoon drawings. I don't know if you all saw that. Do you all see that?
I don't know.
Do you remember that? It was like weird pet peeves, and like each they would have like drawings, and like they would like have like, oh, like an iguana listening to music loudly on a bus or something. Yeah, but yeah. Sam knows what I'm talking about. The rest of you are just like
pulsive TransLink advertising.
Yeah, I mean, I actually like that. That got stuck in my head. It was like one. I know my biggest one is like people that like eat food, like really, like smelly foods. Not just smelly foods, but very like what's the word?
Messy?
Aroma-y, messy, like just loud. Have like just loud loud smells.
Like live animals.
I saw a guy like on the way down to Granville and he was trying to eat like a huge paper plate just loaded with rice and like beans and stuff. But he was like standing in the middle holding on to absolutely nothing and just like surfing with rice like flying everywhere. God. Eating with his little plastic fork. It was an epic feet on his part, and also disgusting.
See, if you can do it, do it. I've seen somebody do that and not drop a thing.
Yeah, there's some people that are just like, you know, masters at like, you know, juggling several things at the same time, right?
Yeah, but your man was not, unfortunately. Tristan?
Yeah, so do you want to start from the top and just like, you know, our biggest, bus pet peeves?
Number one, I can speak for all of us here. I think I know for sure. Tristan, take it away.
Number one, I think pet peeve for most people is, for me personally, is when it's, I'll say for me personally, I won't say for most people, I don't think I have that much authority. But when people don't take their backpacks off and it's a crowded bus, because that really, like, especially the 99 or like even some buses that don't come as much, like every 15 minutes where there's more people waiting and then just you're packed in there like sardines and it's like, come on. Just take that backpack off. We can fit like a little bit more people in this space here.
Yeah. When I first moved down to the old Big Smoke, I didn't realize that because I was like in Whistler, the buses never ever get full. So I was standing on the bus in the rain because it was September of last year when it rained every single day, and some guy was like, "Hey, dude, take off your backpack, man." I turned around. It was Sean.
The
Penn.
Extra,
or it was Sean. Yeah. It was Sean Penn holding a pizza, like in Fast Times at Ridgemont High. He just goes, "Surf's up, bro."
Wait, sorry. Hold up, sorry. I can't tell you meant like Sean Penn. Like, okay, cool.
All right,
cool.
El
Chapo's
best friend.
Best friend, yes. cool.
I'm always really amused by some of the, like, the odd characters that you get. Like, I was riding to a party last weekend, and this old lady got on the bus and started yelling about how she'd once, like, the bus driver had stopped, and she went careening into the coin box and was, like, using this as an excuse for why she didn't have to pay. She was like, She's like, 4 years ago, I suffered blunt force trauma on this coin box, so I don't have to scan my card. And the guy was like, no, I don't accept this at all. And she spent the next 30 minutes, I think, just going on and on about this incident.
Lord.
It was quite amusing.
I remember I was on the, I think it was the 7, 2 weeks ago, and I get on the bus, and there's a guy obviously talking to other people, and I have my headphones in, so I'm like, I do not feel like being roped into this.
You agree with me there. Don't talk to me.
Yeah, don't talk to me.
If I'm anywhere.
So, and then after a while, I see people kind of laughing at what he was saying, so I'm like, okay, I'll take my headphones off. And then he's doing these, like, this like, comedy routine. It's like, and it's very well rehearsed, and it's joke after joke after joke, and he's just saying it to like, hey, you, did you see me on TV last night? Yeah, I had to change the light bulb. I was on there for about 15 minutes, you know, and like doing these jokes, and then he just left the bus. Like, he didn't say anything that was not a joke, and he just got off the bus after a half hour. It was like, I felt like I was touched by like a comedy angel. It was beautiful.
Did he leave at a stop, or did he just like rip open the doors?
No, he actually started driving the bus.
He just like disappeared in like a flash of light.
Yeah.
Because
my work here is done. Yeah. It just evaporates.
Do you think that's like a thing where like people like, you know how like people pay to like play at bars and they have like 5 minutes open or something? Like, maybe this is just like the lower level of that. Like, they have they like 5 minutes on like the 99 bus, and they just like
if you
have
can kill on the 99, you can go anywhere.
You can go
man.
Anywhere, man. Like, you like, I'm sure, like, you know, Chris Rock, you know, broke his way through you know, making comedy jokes on the 99.
Go at least as far as Boundary.
Yeah. Up next, we talk to Tristan about his series of articles about the 99 things to do at UBC. But first, some PSAs.
Discorder, that free magazine from CITR, has been documenting the best in music, arts, and culture since 1983. Let's see what one man of prestige has to say about Discorder.
What up, though? This is Big Snoop Dogg, and I fucks with Discorder magazine. How about that?
Smokey every day. Pick up a copy around Vancouver or fuck with Discorder online at discorder.ca.
Want to know what's up at UBC? Read the UBC. It's only the largest student newspaper in Western Canada, and it's written and edited entirely by UBC students. The UBC is your source for on-campus news, culture, and sports. New editions come out every Monday and Thursday. For breaking news as well as amazing videos and blogs, check out ubc.ca.
Do you want to voice this one?
Yes, I do.
Okay.
Do you want me to voice it?
I can voice it. Yeah, please voice
That's
this
the
one.
Wrong mic.
I forgot.
You f- dip. I can't believe I put up with this. And I asked for a grape soda, you asshole. Okay.
Due to a labor dispute, CITR is missing its star voice actors. That means if you're interested in producing PSAs, advertisements, and various other promotional wonders for airplay on the radio, we need you. Learn how to get involved with CITR's production department and all other facets of volunteering at CITR and Discorder Magazine at CITR.ca. Programming, photography, media training, and more. Plus, a guest star in the lounge. No, wait, we can't promise that.
Can't believe I put up with this.
Welcome back to Cult, the now official, unofficial culture podcast from UBC's official campus newspaper. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM, and we're broadcasting to you from the unceded Musqueam territory. On Cult, we talk about all the things culture taking place on the University of British Columbia campus and the Greater Vancouver area. From plays and musicals to movies being filmed on campus, we've got everything you need right here. If you're coming in right now, we just talked about Jack Lamming's article about bus etiquette, called Move to the Back of the Bus. If you missed it, you can check out our podcast on CITR.ca. Coming right up is our talk with Tristan Wheeler about the 99 things to do at UBC and his adventures with Jack at the Vancouver Fashion Week. And then later on, we have an interview with Moira Whiten, the featured editor at the UBC, and Julie Burnham, a contributor at the UBC. But first, let's find out about the 99 things to do at UBC. Cool. So we're going to like switch over to Tristan's article. He's written a couple of articles. Let's call it a series about the 99 things to do at UBC. It's like a running list that the UBC kind of keeps about things to do, great things. I don't think there are things that you should do. I think there are things that like
things that,
you,
happen,
that some students to try to aspire to, but also things that like bad things that happen to you as well.
Yes.
There's some things that I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy, to be honest. But I guess Sam's probably the best person to like talk to us about that. Could you like just give us like a primer on like what that list is and like what are your favorite items are on that list?
I wrote quite a few. Yeah. And it just because I was around in the summer, a bit bored. And I don't know. I like the one about crying over housing. I'm really relating to that right now. Yeah. It's brutal, man. And
the housing market in Vancouver is horrible. Just like, I mean, I'm stating the obvious right now. I'm stating the obvious, but like, you know, it's like, it's really like one thing that like needs to be on there because it's like the universal like student experience in Vancouver.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah. The cruelest one I think was the one about not getting blackout drunk and like studying for a midterm and like getting your life together for once and then completely failing at getting your life together over and over again.
Yeah.
Oh, that's me. I don't like the sound of that.
That's yeah.
I've heard it too many times in my life.
Yeah. I look forward to seeing Tristan do that one.
Yeah. Tristan. So can you just tell us about like the series you're doing? Obviously, you're not doing like every single thing on that list, right?
Well, I wish
you're
I could
trying
say that.
To.
Oh, okay. One of them was murder the president. Are you gonna do that?
No, that's not on there. Come on, this is a silly show.
This is evidence, Jack.
But no, it's a list of many things, many of which I don't want to do.
But you have to for journalism.
But I have to for because I've been it's been allocated on me. Honestly, I do not think I was asked. I think it was these were made with me in mind, and I was not given any say in the matter. So I've been doing this ever since the beginning of the school year.
By my understanding, I heard that you pitched the series to
No.
Ooh.
They just said you're doing a weekly column?
No, it was a joke. It was like sort of a joke because we kept sending Tristan to like go and eat terrible food. We were like, hey, yeah. we should maybe get him to do this. And then everyone kind of laughed and was like, nah, no way. We take too much effort.
And then you did it?
Yeah, somehow it actually happened.
Because
Tristan
the 99 things has
it.
Been a thing for a while. Or like the 98, 90, however, you know, like the list of things that you do.
It's been one more thing every year.
Yeah, yeah.
Wait. So do you think, in 1918, they were just like, the one thing that you should do at UBC?
It's always been 99 things.
I'm pretty sure it was. It's always like grown bigger. Like it was 97. Really? Yeah. It was like 97 or 90. Oh, wow. Like 6 in my first year. Yeah.
How about that?
Yeah. How about that?
Next year's gonna be 100. The 100th one kill Tristan.
No, I hope not.
So yeah, Tristan, could you like talk to us about like the latest one that you've done, or like at least just kind of like give us the major things you've done on that list so far, and the things you've written about.
If you've seen the old front page of last week's issue, yes, would have been
last week's news, man.
Last week's news. I did a few. I did kind of a series of things over the course of a day, which was really took the wind out of me in a way. But I ran into someone on Main Mall when we were both on our phone. I had to do that to some random strangers, and they all seemed very upset at me. I cried about the housing market, as we mentioned. I also... What was the other one I did there?
You got bitten by a solder
snake. Oh, got bit by a solder snake. Bitten by a solder snake.
Okay, so hold on. This is like a, just like dial it back a little bit and talk about that.
Okay.
Yeah, to just give a little bit more description for the listeners right now.
So if you have been at UBC for a little while, you will have heard of the phrase a solder snake. I don't know where it originally came from. I know there's a Facebook page called Snakes of UBC.
Yeah.
There was a bit of a controversy earlier this year with that moniker as at the Imagine Day first year celebration.
Yeah, I think it was that.
Whereas when they called on the solder, the business students, everyone hissed at them, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It was apparently quite nasty.
Yeah. And then there was an op-ed about it. And so I just want to be clear that I did not get bit by just like a random student. This was an actual snake man, a snake creature.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, this is not just a business student. This isn't me kind of being silly at some business kids.
Wait,
their expense.
So you got bit by a solder snake?
A solder snake.
So the snake went to solder? Isn't commerce?
I think what he's saying is this: it's a snake man. Is it a half man, half snake?
Was he wearing a suit?
Yes.
Oh.
Yes.
Yeah.
What? Yes.
Wait, how many limbs did he have?
Huh?
If he's a snake man, I want to know, like, does he have an average of the amount of limbs between a snake and a man? So does he have two?
All I'm saying is I got bit by a creature.
There's a lot of holes in the story, Tristan.
Yeah, you know what?
Read the piece. It becomes evident.
I'm starting to think you're a liar.
I might have stretched the truth.
Okay, so...
Did he try and get you involved in his startup?
Yeah, I did. I was approached by a...
What was the startup? Was it selling suits to snakes? Did you just buy some tube socks?
I'm not answering that. But yeah, it was fun.
And that was Tristan with his article series about the 99 things to do at UBC. We'll have a PSA break, and after that, we'll be back to talk to both Jack and Tristan about their adventures to Vancouver Fashion Week and the bizarre video they made about it.
I'm Amy Goodman, host of Democracy Now!, daily grassroots, global, unembedded, international, independent news hour. And this is CITR 101.9 FM.
Indigitization is a program that provides resources and training for First Nations and Aboriginal organizations throughout British Columbia. Come out November 24th from 1 to 4 p.m. in room 2311 in the AMS Nest for a three-hour workshop that will engage participants in a conversation about the unique context of working with Indigenous cultural heritage materials, as well as introduce the tools and equipment necessary to digitize audio cassettes for long-term preservation.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Cult from the UBC. We're coming to you from CITR 101.9 FM and broadcasting to you from the unceded Musqueam territory. I'm Olamide Olanion, a staff writer of the UBC. On Cult, we talk about what's going on in the arts and culture scene at UBC. To do that, we'll be discussing the scoop, talking about stories that are aligning the UBC every week. We'll be talking to creators and creatives involved in the various projects around town, writers and directors, slam poets and musicians, actors and artists. If you're just popping in right now, we previously talked about the necessity of bus etiquette and the 99 things to do UBC. Coming right up, though, we have both Tristan and Jack in the studio talking about a very bizarre video they made about Vancouver Fashion Week. Let's dive right in. Do you want to talk about the Fashion Week video?
Do sure. we?
Yes.
Okay, cool. So you guys both went to Vancouver Fashion Week, and I'm sure you guys would be invited next year. I don't know from what like the video.
Oh, I don't think it's gonna happen.
Yeah. So, Sam. Okay. So, first of all, I want to know how the idea came about, and then I also want to talk about how. Let's start off with that first. How did the video come to be? What did you guys? How did you guys start thinking about that?
Well, I get like about 50 emails a day from media companies trying to like pitch stories, and we got one for the Vancouver Fashion Show. I thought it would be cool, and Jack has done a lot of fashion writing for me.
But I have.
Yeah, a lot. And so we emailed like trying to see what we could get, and they offered press and video passes, and we didn't really want to write an article about it because it didn't seem like the right kind of venue. But the idea of sending Jack and Tristan to go wreak havoc at the Vancouver Fashion Show was too
tantalizing.
Good an opportunity to pass up. It was just too good. But I think they had in mind something a lot more like Daily Hive-esque, you know, with like cleanly edited, focused shots and like, you know, very flattering. And that's not what they got. So,
yeah.
Yeah, Jack was on camera, so you attested
my,
that.
My side of the story is a bit different. I heard about the thing. You were like, oh, they sent me passes for Fashion Week, so do you want to go? It's like, okay, sounds good. I was down to write a normal article. I didn't see anything wrong with that. You know, I've never been to a runway show before. I always thought that would be kind of cool. And then I come in one day, he goes, oh, yeah, we got two passes. You're going with a videographer, and you're going to make a video. And so that was my life.
And man, I work you guys hard, don't I?
Oh. Yeah, and it was going to be me and I'm not exactly sure who, and then Kate, the video editor, was like, hey, well, I think I pitched to Tristan if he wanted to come.
Yeah, I remember you were like, yeah, I'm going to Fashion Week with a video person. I'm like, oh, it should be me. And then you're like, oh, I don't know. I'm like, no, it's me. And then after saying it enough, I just sort of made it true.
You just glommed on to me. And which worked out really well because I sort of remembered that I'm terrible on camera. Like, I just can't do it. I'm fine on the radio, but I can't be on camera. I seize up. So Tristan ended up being the host, and the autofocus on the camera didn't work, and the manual focus was incredibly spotty. And
well, the manual focus is totally up to you, so...
Okay. So first of all, you dressed, Tristan, in the video, you dressed up in a very large sweater. And yeah, I think people in the video seemed a little bit perplexed about what you were wearing. Could you kind of talk about like your decision? Who were you wearing?
Who was that? So if you see the video, it is a blue, kind of navy blue sweater.
Is it 100% wool?
I think it is 100% wool.
Wow.
And kind of stitched into it is the picture of a man wearing like a green kind of outfit with a dog next to him and then a lake house in the background. All on a, and it's kind of like knitted into it. So it's.
The term's intarsia or intarsia. It's when that's.
Is that
when
what that's.
When it's woven in, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So it's kind of, it's in there. It's. And it's striking. It's very striking to be wearing a sweater with
it looks
such
like it
a
weighs
seam.
About 80 pounds.
It's warm. It's very warm.
So based off of the, like, were there any, like, weird look that people, because in the video there's not, like, that many people looking at you strangely, right? But, like, off the camera, were there, like, people that just came up to you and, like, yo, like, get the hell out of here? Or, like, you are... an embarrassment or, you know,
no,
his parents.
Because the way it is with the Fashion Week is everyone is just as strange as they can be at that point in terms of what they're wearing. There was like a couple guys with just like, yeah, like I painted on my overalls. And I think you see them in the video for a second. and there's other people that just basically, yeah, like really expressing themselves. So you do maybe get a look in the sense of what is that guy wearing, but there's no looks of like, get out of here, this guy's a joke, because everyone looks like a joke.
It's pretty rude to the fashionistas.
Yeah,
Vancouver,
that's pretty a hot take. Could you like also talk to me about like so the video format was very I guess do it yourself a little bit. Was that an intentional move, or was that like just like you just had no footage and like had to like really just improvise?
That was an intentional move. About as soon as we left, we sort of realized what we'd done.
Yeah.
And if you look up, there's a YouTube channel called Good Neighbor Stuff. If you it's Kyle Mooney, Beck Bennett, and this other guy. Kyle Mooney.
Nick Rutherford is the other guy.
Thank you. Yeah. Kyle Mooney and Beck Bennett, and I'm not sure about the other unnamed man, are currently on SNL, which is Saturday Night Live. And it's their old YouTube channel from years and years and years ago. And they do these videos where they go to, like, sports games and
conferences, conventions. Yeah.
And they just have the most insanely weird editing style. It's like a home movie sort of thing.
Nice.
But if your dad tried to edit it without thumbs... And it's like, it's so weird. Like, nothing makes any sense in the edit. And his talking style is so weird. It's great. And Kate sent us one of those videos. She was like, I'm editing it like that. Any objections? We're like, nope. We love it even more. Yeah. So that's how that became that.
Nice. I think the end of the video, there's just like a bunch of people that came out from nowhere. I just wanted to like tell me a little bit about the story about like how that, like, who were those people and like how that happened.
Well, I was trying to do the outro just outside saying, oh, I'm Tristan from the UBC. And I kept messing up the line, kept flubbing the line. And then these guys kind of come over and they're kind of watching us and they're like, hey, what's this for? And like, oh, just for like the student paper, you know, like, you know, just feeling like kind of like a fraud. And they're like, yeah, why don't we like come in or something when you're done and you won't screw up the line? And honestly, they're like, it worked because that was the first take and they all came in like, oh, and then, the pressure of them coming in and having that involvement, it worked and I was able to finish the videos.
Fantastic. That's pretty cool. Sam, just like a last question for you. Are you ever going to send Tristan and Jack to do a video again?
Many, many more. We're going to find so many events across Vancouver to destroy. There's one I went down to
destroy.
Just like,
why aren't we at VIF?
We're gonna get banned from everything. There's a wine tasting that the Arts Club does downtown. I'm not sure if it's coming up or if it's past. And it's some of the wealthiest kind of 50 to 70 year old people in Vancouver trying wine from every vineyard in BC.
And you wouldn't.
And I went there last year, and you just go in with a wine glass, and then you. Like, you get to try everything.
No. How much does this cost?
I got the tickets for free. But they normally about $120. And I was thinking of getting you guys to go, and then we can film it, because most of these people get wasted. No one spits out their wine. And it was honestly one of the funniest things I've ever experienced. And I think that's on my list for you guys.
Yeah, I'm incredibly down to do that. Tristan,
yeah,
how are you feeling?
Sounds good to me.
Yeah. Tristan, you have to stay the host. I'll work out. I'll figure out
camera
stuff.
Yeah, you get better
stuff. At cameras. Yeah, and okay, dynamic duo.
Didn't you guys have an interview with a Japanese like designer that went badly?
Oh man,
the guy.
I remember
spoke,
hearing about that. Yeah,
yeah, that's about the, that got left on the cutting room floor for good reason.
Many reasons. The guy spoke about four words of English, and this was at the point in the night where we were both so flustered. Tristan, I think you held the mic like right in front of you for almost the entire interview. And
we talked to a couple designers, and there was kind of an area where press people would just hang out and designers would just come in and be like, okay, well, I'm doing an interview. So she comes in and it's like, oh, we have him. And you're like, okay, I guess that's our guy. So then we go outside and it's through an interpreter. So I say my thing. I say, so what did you get inspiration from? She has to say it. And then say in Japanese to the designer, and then he has to give his answer to her and then to me. So I'm holding the mic, not sure, do I put the mic over to him saying it in Japanese because it's him saying it, or do I put it over to her because she's saying the English translation, or do I go in between? And it was just such a, I felt like just such a, like, it was only 4 minutes because I'm like, I got to get out of here.
It was an ordeal. You could see it in your eyes, the pain.
It was very uncomfortable.
You guys have to show me that footage.
It would be sort of the thing where I would ask a kind of maybe a little more of a conversational question, which is probably part of the issue. She would translate it to him. He would talk for, he would, seems like he'd have, like, you know, he'd go on for a little bit in Japanese. And then she would just say, oh, comme de garçon. Like, she'd just give, like, a one-word answer. And I'm like, I think he said a little bit more.
Yeah, it was pretty great. You're getting really blunt answers to pretty open-ended questions. It was amazing.
What was your impression of Fashion Week, like, overall? Because it's, you know, it's starting up, right? It's not been around that long.
No, it's pretty small time, man. Like,
it is.
They told us which designers we were going to interview. And I think the Japanese guy didn't have any social media presence.
Noir was his name, right?
No, Noiritoff was the label.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
The other girl whose Tristan's face was zoomed into.
Her name was Sam Skinner. I remember her name. Samantha Skinner.
Samantha Skinner. Super nice. But yeah, she had like, they were really small time.
Yeah, they're just starting out. It's kind of a smaller, for smaller, lesser known designers, which I think is probably community, local.
Yeah.
A local environment.
Like all the shows were, I think it was 15 minutes and then it's straight to the next one. And that's, super quick.
And that was Tristan Wheeler and Jack Lamine talking about their adventure at the Vancouver Fashion Week and the really, really bizarre video they made. Check out the video on the UBC's Facebook page. Up next, we have the UBC's features editor, Maura Whiten, and a contributor, Julie Burnham, and they talk about their memoirs that were in the culture section. We'll have some PSAs, and then we'll be right back.
An enabled FM chip in your smartphone can make the difference in an emergency situation by allowing you to still hear critical updates. It will also let you listen to the local FM station using 3 times less battery and 20 times less data than streaming. Visit freeradioonmyphone.ca to see how you can get involved by contacting your carrier and signing our petition.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back. You're listening to Cult. This is a Great Probation podcast from the Embassy. We're broadcasting to you from the unceded territories of the Musqueam people. First off, we got the Supreme Cult Leader, the culture editor at the Embassy, Sam Dubois, and he will introduce the memoir series to us. Then we'll jump right in to our talk with Moira and Julia about their memoir pieces. All right. Sam, so we got the memoir series going up. We have like 4 now up already. Right?
Yeah, we've got. I think we're up to that at this point, 4 or 5.
Could you tell me about, like, you know, what motivated? I guess like the inspiration for the series, and also, like, first of all, what was the inspiration for the series?
Well, it was last year, and I kept getting a lot of people telling me these really, really interesting stories about, like, where they were from or things that had happened to them before they came to UBC, sometimes after. And I always remember there was this guy in my fiction class in second year who said he'd been involved in the Arab Spring in Egypt and fled government persecution and things like that. And I thought, you know, I'm sitting in this lecture hall bored out of my mind, but I'm surrounded by the most interesting people. And wouldn't it be cool as part of our section to, like, capture the uniqueness and experiences of these people in some way? And so we kind of started the memoir series. The first one was about drugs and addiction. And it did really, really well. And then this year we've been focusing on trying to find more stigmatized issues. We talked about first times with periods. We have a memoir by Moira Whiten about that, which is excellent. And we also talked about first year disappointments, because we felt that there were a lot of people who were really unhappy with first year, but didn't really feel like there were others like them who could share in their, you know, displeasure. And yeah, it's gotten a lot of momentum. I have quite a few that I'm kind of slowly rolling out over the next few months.
All right, thank you guys.
No problem.
Yeah, thanks for
pleasure. Having us. It's great having being on.
All right, here's Moira and Julia. Welcome, Moira Whiten and Julia Burnham.
Thank you for having us.
Thanks, Olaf.
Yeah, so you both wrote memoirs for the Culture Section's memoir series, but at first I want to kind of give the audience a primer on who you guys are, and Moira, you want to go first?
Sure. So I'm Moira, and I'm the features editor for the UBC right now.
And Julia?
I'm Julia, and I'm currently nothing for the UBC right now. I was really involved last year.
Yeah, okay. I mean, you former staff, senior staff writer, and contributor this year, right?
Contributor, yeah. Yes.
There you go. Like, come on. Like, believe in yourself, Julia. Come on. Yeah, so you wrote a memoir for the Culture Section's memoir series. But first, I want to kind of give the audience a primer to, like, who you are, first of all. What do you do for the UBC?
Sure. So I'm the features editor for the UBC.
Cool. And could you tell us like the name of the article and what it was about?
Yeah. So I wrote a memoir. It came out a few weeks ago now, early October, called First Period and Unlimited Ribs. A First Period from Hell and Unlimited Ribs at Montana's.
Cool. And like, what was it about?
It was about my first period, which came when I was 13. And it was funny because I originally didn't think that the story was really worth telling or writing about or putting in our fine publication either. But a bunch of us were going to Soyuz for an editor's retreat, and there were about five of us crammed in this tiny little red moto. Speeding is a strong word because Natalie was driving. So we were moving slowly but steadily. Yeah, exactly. Our beloved design editor. We were moving slowly but steadily towards the Soyuz. And it was a Friday afternoon. It was gorgeous. Gorgeous out. And I can't remember how we got on the topic. We're talking about awkward experiences. And I said, oh, man, do I have an awkward experience for you? Do you want to hear about my first period? And Sam Dubois, our culture editor, said yes. And I told the story, and oh my goodness, he was crying by the end and just said, you should write about that. And, you know, a few days later and 900 words, here we are.
Nice. So second of all, you had your lead was pretty interesting, I think. Could you just share that with like the audience? Because it was a pretty great lead.
My lead was my first period was a lot like Saving Private Ryan, except Tom Hanks wasn't there.
Oh, nice.
Thank you.
So this is just like more serious question. Had you like gotten any kind of like, you know, like lessons about that, or any like kind of like warning signals that, or it was just like out of nowhere? Yeah.
My period?
Yeah.
I got the Alberta sex education, which actually is quite comprehensive and definitely doesn't deserve all the jabs I gave it in the memoir. But I got a good like idea of how things work and why they work that way, and but not necessarily what to expect. I think, you know, they kind of give you the classic like, you'll bleed, put a pad on, it's a little bit painful sometimes, but like not that bad, blah blah blah. And of course like tampon and pad commercials make it look like you've just got this clear blue liquid that just trickles out of you and is easily absorbed. But I think what was the reason that, you know, through the memoir I developed the idea that I had no idea what's happening, and that was true. The reason I didn't really suspect getting my period is because my symptoms seemed really severe and like the blood was definitely not blue liquid. So I really had no benchmark for understanding what was going on.
Yeah, my first thought when reading this was like, damn, like women are freaking metal. I don't know if like that's like, Julia, have you read the piece?
I have read the piece. I read everything Moira writes because I'm her biggest fan.
Yeah, but it sounds like your teacher was kind of like the real MVP. So how did you like alert her when like this started happening and like she knew what was up with you?
Well, yeah, that's a good question. She was the MVP. She's great. I had her for 3 years in junior high. I mean, I think she already knew something was up when I was like sitting in kind of like an upright fetal position with my my calves on my desk, like curled up in my chair. So she definitely knew something was wrong. But at that point, the lights were off and we were watching Bill Nye, as Canadian junior high schools are wont to do. And I was sitting there and I was in pain. And I think she could tell, and I just said, hey, like, I'm feeling, like, some pain or, like, some stomach cramps. I don't think, like, at that point, I didn't really know what was going on or how to explain it. So I think maybe she thought it was my period and I just didn't want to talk about it. Or maybe she just didn't assume and wanted to let me be. So I ended up just sitting in a different chair in the back of the classroom instead, so I didn't have to be in the sight line of my peers.
that's so nice. Sad.
Yeah.
So
I
don't
get any friends anyways.
So you mentioned in your article, the memoir, about a toxic peer narrative, right? And, you know, you asked the readers to kind of forget what they think they know. Could you talk a little bit more about that and, like, the toxic peer narrative?
Yeah, I think I alluded to it a little bit earlier that, you know, first of all, period commercials just make you they make it seem like periods are just, like, a blip on the radar, you know, put a pad on, pop in a tampon, and you're kind of good to go. Like, there's no residual effects, but I think I was really surprised when I got it. Like, first of all, it's messy. It's not like a neat little blue liquid dribbling out and being absorbed. Like, it's messy as hell. We're active women. We're moving around. It's not easy necessarily to contain. But also, like, there just isn't a discussion of, like, sometimes how deeply it can affect your mood, how tired you can get, like, how the pain impacts, like, what you feel up to, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, in school, we were just taught about, like, the symptoms and, like, how to deal with it and, you know, blah, blah, blah. But I think, like, what was striking for me and why maybe I didn't realize what was going on was that, you know, every woman's body is different, and my body was not acting like a little cup full of blue liquid pouring out. It was, you know, kind of up in upheaval and causing me some discomfort and distress. So that really, yeah, very much. Yeah, you're right. I shouldn't template it. But yeah, it's definitely an issue when, you know, what you're taught to expect or what you think is normal is completely not what actually happens. And I think that's, you know, it's dangerous if you don't have, you know, the support of people to kind of explain and support you through that.
Cool. The first part of the memoir talks about more like the actual experience of the period, right? The visceral experience of just like everything in pain.
Yes.
And then the second part talks about like a lot about how you're trying to cope with the embarrassment of like, I guess embarrassment of like having your period for the first time and you trying to like actively hide it from people that's like around you. Could you like just talk to me a little bit about that?
Well, yeah, I think I was lucky, first of all, that my family is, like, super hippy-dippy, or at least, like, my mom is much more, like, very much so. So I was never worried, really, about telling them about it being, like, embarrassing or shameful or anything like that. But, you know, just, like, my normal, like, 13-year-old embarrassment of having to explain to my dad that there's, you know, blood coming out of my vagina. That's not a conversation I want to have a lot of the time.
Dad.
But, you know, my mom is really supportive. She spent a couple formative years in Australia when she was an early teen. And, like, there they, like, treated periods with parties, blah, blah, blah. So she was super supportive and just wanted to, like, make sure that it was, like, celebrated.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I think, like, one of the things about getting your first period is it totally changed, like, to me at least, it changed my idea of, like, what my body was. Like, now my body was almost, like, betraying me. It was, like, you know, doing all this,
the knife out of your back.
You know, like, doing some crap that I wasn't cool with. And, yeah, like, a wooden spoon was wedged in my vertebrae. It was so painful. But, yeah, and, like, it was kind of this new, like, oh, wow, my body does stuff that I don't always like, and I got to deal with that. And I think there's a little bit of embarrassment in that because periods are sometimes seen as, like, dirty, but really you don't have any control over it. So it's an agency issue for sure, and just feeling comfortable talking about this process that you don't really have any say in.
I wanted to ask Julia, how was your experience in, like, contrast to Moira?
Trying to remember my experience, I feel like it might have been, like, I maybe got my first period at horseback riding camp, as, like, white as that sounds. That was a time. I'm trying to remember. Honestly, like, I don't have such a vivid memory of it, but I do remember one of my very first periods happened when I was on, like, an 8-hour flight. And, like, I kept freaking out and going up to, like, go to the bathroom and change, like, my pad or whatever every hour because I was like, oh, my God, like, I can't bleed on these airplane seats.
Yeah, like, when you're, like, sitting and you got a pad on, like, you are asking for leaks.
I feel like I am
like
an
the
adult
White House leaker.
Diaper. Like, that is what it is. It's an adult diaper.
I think it's interesting, though, because people are always like, oh, like, I got so many people being like, oh, it's so brave of you to write about this.
Yeah.
And, like, yeah, like, I guess because of the stigma it is. But honestly, periods aren't something that we have anything to, like, be ashamed of, yeah. and there's no control women have over that process, really. Mm-hmm. So, like, why not share our stories? Because it's pretty funny when you look, especially when you look at it in hindsight. I'm not saying I was laughing the whole time
when it was happening.
Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, when you look at it in hindsight, it's a powerful story to share, and there's no, like, personal blame to be placed.
So we kind of, like, the second part, we kind of talked about, like, having a period party, right? And you went to Montana's, is that the name of the place? And it's, like, unlimited ribs. Yeah. Okay, cool.
Essential Alberta, like, experience.
Could you, like, just, like, recount, like, you know, that experience for the listeners?
Sure. So I got home, and I told my mom while we were in the car, I was like, there's this brown crap coming out of me. Am I shitting myself? I'm really confused. Everything hurts. And I was, like, laughing so hard. She's like, no, like, it's just old period blood. And I was like, great. So we get home, and she's hippy-dippy, and my sister's there. And she's like, oh, like, we're going to celebrate. Like, we'll go out to, like, Montana's. Like, this is really exciting. Or we'll go out for dinner. So she calls my dad, who at this point is coming home from, or, like, is about to come home from work. It's, like, 5:30 or something. And she calls him and says, like, hey, let's go for dinner. He suggests Montana's. So she's like, okay. And then we get in the car. He's like, oh, I'm, like, leaving work now, so I'll just meet you there. We all drive over, and Mom, Kim, and I get there first, my sister, Kim, and my dad walks in older male cousin who had been staying with us at the time because he was doing a course at one of the local universities. And he's, like, 21 or 22 at this time, and, like, we're friends, but, like, I don't really know him very well. He's just kind of, like, my cousin staying in our house, and I guess my dad had picked him up from university on the way home because he was like, oh, hey, we're going for dinner, like, Cam.
Hey, we're going
to
Montana's.
Yeah, like, you know, come for dinner, blah, blah, blah. So Cam comes along, and, you know, I'm already, like, not really dreading, but definitely, like, nervous to tell my dad, and, like, my male cousin comes in, so, and I didn't really want to tell him, but, yeah, and so he comes in, and we just had dinner under the pretense that we were just having a nice family dinner out, not, celebrating, you know, blood gushing out of me. So
I think the story in there is like, oh, like, you got good grades or something, and like,
yeah, my dad was like, oh, why are we having dinner? And my mom's like, oh, like, Moira got some really good grades back. So, like, it was plausible, like, not to brag, but, like, it was
sorry,
just
were you
weird.
Smart in, like, middle school?
I was. Then before the accident.
You mean attending university?
Yeah, like, before I made the mistake of coming to UBC.
That's a dark sense of humor, but okay. Do you guys want to add anything else to this period discussion?
Just that I hope more women share their stories, and or more people who have periods, not just women. I'm lucky enough in the UBC office that we talk about it pretty openly when we're feeling periody and gross and don't feel like being at work. But, you know, I just encourage people to keep going about it because it's an important discussion and it's impacting just about every woman or every person of the female sex that you know.
Yeah.
Lovely.
That's it.
Okay, we're going to switch gears to Julia. Could you tell me and the listeners what your memoir was called and what it was about?
So I believe my memoir was called Feeling Alone in First Year. I didn't actually pick the title, so I really have not had that.
Do you have any, like, workshop? Do you want to, like, workshop the title? Maybe change it to, like, what you actually really feel, or?
I don't know. It was more like, first year really sucked. That's pretty much it. But, yeah, I had the unique experience of transferring to UBC halfway through my first year.
From where?
From Sciences Po, which is so Sciences Po is the Institute of Political Studies in France. UBC offers a dual degree program with them, which was a program that I was in, and also that Moira is presently a member of.
Indeed,
dual degree program.
Yep. The dual degree program. So you do 2 years of university in France with Sciences Po, and then 2 years at UBC. You get 2 degrees.
It's a trap.
It is a trap. So that's the program that I was in, and I transferred out after a semester. And then I was kind of flung into UBC, and I started living in Res, and I was severely disappointed in that experience.
So one of the things you first mentioned in the article was how, like, Sciences Po different from UBC, particularly in the sense that the toxic atmosphere for student well-being. Do you want to kind of, like, elaborate on that a little bit?
Yeah, I mean, to start Sciences Po, like to get an idea, the campus that I was at, which was in Reims, which is a small town in the Champagne region of France.
Champagne.
It's like 200,000.
Okay, but
it's
like...
like a small city.
It's not like Vancouver, okay?
Yeah, true.
And we only really hung out in the sketchy area that surrounded campus, to be honest.
True.
So there's about, at the time, I think there was 800 or 900 students that were on the campus. So that's smaller than my high school to start. And